Hello and welcome to the Miko Peled Hour. I'm your host, Miko Peled. Thank you for joining me. My guest today, a friend of mine as well from Jerusalem, from Palestine, Yazan Rishit. He was born and raised in Jerusalem, on the Palestinian side of Jerusalem. And he is the director of Grassroots Al-Quds, which is a grassroots Palestinian organization that exists and operates in Jerusalem. Al-Quds is the Arabic name for Jerusalem. And I'll ask him about the organization, about his work, and about the reality for Palestinians in Jerusalem. A lot of people don't realize that Jerusalem is has a very significant Palestinian population, a population that has history going back, in some cases, some families, 800 and 1,000 years, and they have their status is very precarious. And so I'll let Yazan talk about their status and so forth. And just like the rest of Palestine, the events of October 7th in the last 3 months, the horrible massacre that's been taking place in the Gaza Strip has affected everyone in Palestine, and of course Jerusalem is particularly important. So I'll ask him about that as well. So Yazan, thank you again. Thank you again for joining me once again. It's good to see you. And tell us, maybe we'll start just a little bit about your work and about the organization that you run.
First of all, hello everyone. And I'm very happy to be here with you, Miko, and I'm very glad to be on this show during this tough period. Let me introduce Grassroots Al-Quds first. It is Grassroots Al-Quds actually was established in 2011 as a Palestinian organization or a platform for Palestinian networking in Jerusalem or in the historic Jerusalem, not Jerusalem according to the municipal borders or Jerusalem according to the war borders. Our goal is to support the Palestinian Sumud. Sumud is an Arabic word for steadfastness and resilience in Al-Quds. We research and create knowledge that supports community mobilization. We build networks between the different Palestinian communities in Jerusalem so they can overcome their fragmentation by the Israeli occupation authorities and make long-term plans and strategies for the city as a whole.
Let me interrupt you for just a second, just for the sake of clarity. So, because you mentioned the boundaries of Jerusalem, a lot of people think that Jerusalem is just the old city. So Jerusalem is much larger than that. Can you talk a little bit about what is the size of the Palestinian population in Jerusalem that are actually residents, Jerusalem residents?
The Jerusalem residents are now 350,000, almost 350,000 Palestinians. On the other side, there are more than 600,000 Israeli settlers in Jerusalem. And for
In Palestinian East Jerusalem, you mean there are 600 settlers?
No, in whole Jerusalem. And because, Jerusalem is divided into two parts, the eastern part of Jerusalem and the western part of Jerusalem. The western part of Jerusalem, which is occupied in 1948 and continued to be occupied in 1967, and most of the Israelis are now living in the western side of Jerusalem. In the eastern side of Jerusalem, where the old city of Jerusalem is located, where also the Al-Aqsa Mosque is located, and the Church of Holy Sepulchre is located, also inside the old city of Jerusalem, which is also in the eastern part of Jerusalem. And there is a green, internationally recognized green line, which splits Jerusalem into two parts, the eastern side and the western side. Talking about the wall borders, there are communities that are recognized as Jerusalem inside the wall, and there are also neighborhoods, Palestinian neighborhoods, just like Kfar Aqab, that are located outside the wall, but it is considered Jerusalem, and it is
So the
very, very
wall is the separation wall that Israel built, the segregation wall that Israel built, supposedly to divide Palestinians from Israelis, but it's really dividing Palestinians
from Palestinians.
from Palestinians. Let me ask you one more question. I hate to interrupt you, but just for the sake of everybody understanding. So, There are about 350,000 Palestinian residents and about 600,000 Israeli settlers. My family is one of those settlers. That's where I grew up. I was raised, born and raised in West Jerusalem, which was occupied in 1948. They do not have the same status because I, as an Israeli resident of Jerusalem, have a citizenship and that cannot be taken away. The Palestinian residents of Jerusalem have a different status. Can you talk about their status?
That's why it is very important to divide Jerusalem, because me as a Palestinian living in East Jerusalem, I need to prove that Jerusalem is my center of life. It means that I work in Jerusalem, I live in Jerusalem, I get treatments, medical treatments in Jerusalem, and my kids go to a school in Jerusalem, and I own or rent a house in Jerusalem. Which Jerusalem? If you live inside the wall, so this is Jerusalem. If you live outside the wall, for example, in Kfar Aqab or in Shafat refugee camp, where Palestinians need to go through checkpoints in order to reach the other side of the wall, it is considered also Jerusalem, but they do not benefit anything from the taxes they pay. The most important here is the legal status of Palestinians. As I said, I have a permanent residency where they can revoke it whenever they want, so it's not permanent. And I need to provide the proper documentations whenever I need to renew my residency. I need to renew my residency each 10 years. And I need to provide water bills, tax property, they call it the Arnona, and all the other documentations I mentioned here, the kids, the medical treatment, and everything. And if I fail to provide this information or proper documentation, I will be asked to provide more documentations. And at the end of the day, if I fail to prove that Jerusalem is my center of life, it's very easy to revoke my residency.
And then
Revoking
what are you
residency.
supposed to, if they revoke it, where do you go?
Yeah, that's a very good question. If they revoke my residency, I will go to the other side, to the West Bank, where I cannot issue a Palestinian ID or a Palestinian passport. I'm because I don't have an ID which is identical to my nationality. I have a Jordanian passport that I need to renew each 5 years in Jordan. So I travel to Jordan to renew my passports each 5 years. It's very complicated,
So
especially on the courts.
let me try to summarize that and tell me if I missed something, okay? So, well, let me ask you first a question. Do the Israeli Jewish residents of Jerusalem have to go through the same thing?
Of course not. No. They have the Israeli citizenship.
So Israeli Jews have citizenship, the Palestinian when they are residents of Jerusalem, and they can come and go. So I can come back after 25 years and I'm still a resident. I can live there if I like.
Absolutely.
I don't have to provide any proof or anything. It's all given.
No.
You as a Palestinian and all Palestinians, even I don't I'm not familiar with how long your family's been there, but I have friends whose families have been there for 800 years. They do not have any kind of citizenship. If they do not prove and provide all the paperwork that you indicated, then their residency is taken away from them. They have to leave Jerusalem, but they don't have any citizenship anywhere else. And as it is, even as a citizen of Jerusalem, in order to have a passport, you have to apply for a Jordanian passport, which is a whole other country.
Yes,
A whole
absolutely.
other country.
Yes. Actually,
I just
you're
want to clarify just how complicated and complex it is to be a Palestinian resident of Jerusalem and how hard the Israelis are making it to stay.
Palestinians in Jerusalem specifically usually make sure that they always prove that Jerusalem is their center of life, because the definition of center of life is vague. It could be anything, so they always make sure that someone is at home for night raids. They come at night, they check if you are at your home or not. And they start searching in that you have food in the fridge, you have clothes in the
This is
yeah.
random. This is random.
Yeah, this is random. They will not call you before and tell you, no, we are coming. No, they come and that's it. Or maybe they sometimes they call you on your home number to make sure that you are in your house, and they ask to talk to some neighbors that are registered in the Ministry of Interior that we live in the same location to make sure that we live here. And
Who
if
is
you fail,
doing this?
Employees at the Ministry of Interior, actually, especially in the old city of Jerusalem, they usually call people on their homes, home numbers, and then they ask to talk to other neighbors, and they know the names. For example, Yazan, okay, you live in East Jerusalem. Let me talk to Miko. He's your neighbor. If he's at home, please let me talk to him.
Now, why do you think they do all this?
You know, pushing Palestinians out of Jerusalem is the goal. Emptying the city.
Ethnic cleansing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's actually what's happening, what happened and still happening. And I want to tell you something when we talk about the events or how Jerusalem has been, or how the war has been reflected in Jerusalem. The settlers' projects in Jerusalem didn't stop. Tomorrow, there will be a court hearing for a new settlement inside the eastern part of Jerusalem in Im Laysoun. That's why what Ir Amim and Bimkom actually worked on and still working on. There is like actually the Israeli authorities advanced a settlement plan in the Palestinian neighborhood of Im Laysoun. And this advancement actually comes on the heels of the recent district planning committee decision to reject all filed objections and approve the Givat Shaked settlement plan.
So can you explain what does a settlement mean in the context of Jerusalem, which is already a city? It's already there. What does that mean, a settlement in that context?
Yeah, actually, a settlement, actually, most of the Palestinians here, they don't call it settlement, they call it colonies. They have a community, and it is not always Orthodox, or it is a Jewish community from different backgrounds. Usually, they are from outside the country, and they come here, they talk, they take over the land, and they start building houses and homes, and at the end of the day, it will be like a large colony with a lot of settlers inside, with security guards not allowing Palestinians to enter this settlement, even if they just want to cross the road, you know.
But wait a minute! But Jerusalem is already a city. Jerusalem is already a city. It's already there. So you mean they're developing? They're developing like a neighborhood or something like that in addition to what already exists.
Yeah.
And can you buy a house there?
No, of course not. And I cannot use the facilities there. There is a public library there where I cannot use. I pay for it. Okay. I pay for my taxes for the security guards as well. But
so
I am
this
not
is,
allowed to use it.
So this is an absolute, this is absolute racist discrimination. They built for Jews only on Palestinian land in Jerusalem.
Absolutely. And there are like different kinds of settlement. There are settlements which is called a one building settlement. For example, they come to a family, and according to the absentee property law, the Palestinian family, they fail to prove the ownership of this building and they take it. So it is a one building settlement with the Israeli flag, just like a settlement in Atur in the eastern side of Mount of Olives, the eastern side of Jerusalem. The other kind of settlement, which are the big settlements, just like Ma'ale Adumim and all the settlements we hear near Gaza. And there are industrial settlements, just like Atarot. It is a settlement in the heart of the Palestinian community. It is near Beit Hanina, and it is only industrial. So there are like different kinds of, they build malls there, for example, where people can shop. But of course, they confiscate the land from the Palestinians in order to build settlements. And there is a, are you familiar with the term Silicon Valley?
Yeah, of course.
Yes. So they are planning to build a new Silicon Valley in Jerusalem. They invited many high tech and, you know, this kind of companies to move their headquarters to Jerusalem in the eastern side of Jerusalem, in Wadi al-Jawz, actually, where I live now. And people are now getting the, what they call it, the evacuation order, because they failed to prove the ownership of these shops. And so that the Israeli authorities will take the land and build the Silicon Valley. Actually, we wrote a very, very impressive article about Silicon Valley. You can find it on our website, grassrootsalquds.org, and many more about the settler projects.
I want to say something about that. I want to encourage people to go to, what do you call it? Grassrootsalquds.org.
Yes.
And Alquds is A-L-Q-U-D-S. To read more about this. I just want to say again, if you're joining us now, this is the Miko Peled Hour. I'm Miko Peled. I'm speaking to my friend Yazan, who is the executive director of Grassroots Al-Quds, and a grassroots organization that operates in East Jerusalem. And we're talking about the conditions of Palestinians residents in Jerusalem and how they're being, every effort is being made to force them out. And development is taking place within the Palestinian communities in East Jerusalem, but for Jews only. Developments, housing, and so on, the Jews only, even though the Palestinians are paying the same taxes as the Jews, they do not have the same status. They have no citizenship. Their status as residents of Jerusalem can be taken away at any time, but this is only... this only applies to Palestinians. It does not apply to Israeli Jewish settlers or residents in Jerusalem at all, regardless if they live in West or East Jerusalem. So this is a crux of the issue here that people need to understand. You know, when we talk about apartheid, when we talk about ethnic cleansing, these are the details, and these things are happening not in secret, not in hiding, but anybody can see it. Anybody driving around can see this.
Yes.
Anyway, go on. You were talking about all these different developments that are taking place in on Palestinian land at the expense of Palestinians. So go on, continue, please.
Yeah, and I'll just give another example, which is the cable car. It is a tourist project for tourists. Okay. So tourists can go from the German colony. There is an area on the western side of Jerusalem, which is called the German colony. They will take them using a cable car over Silwan, which is inside the eastern part of Jerusalem where Palestinians live. So people cannot cross the road and see how Palestinians are living in Silwan, this concrete jungle. But they fly over Silwan and then they go to another place, a cemetery, the Jewish cemetery in Mount of Olives. This also will be implemented very, very soon. I heard that this project has been postponed for some years, but this was a long time ago. I don't know.
I heard about this too.
Yeah, yeah. And they are not publishing anything, any updates about this project yet. But this is what the plan looks like in terms of projects or development projects or
economy. Let's talk about, you mentioned Silwan. Oh, there's a lot of things I want to talk with you about, but you mentioned Silwan, so I want to touch on that. So Silwan is a community, and correct me if I'm wrong, Silwan is a community just outside the walls of the old city,
mm-hmm.
adjacent to the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in a valley, a beautifully historical valley, and some 50,000 residents, I believe, in Silwan.
More or less, yes.
And someone decided for some reason that that's where King David used to live. And so they built an archaeological park called the City of David, right?
Yes.
And settlers have been taking over homes of Palestinians in Silwan. And the digging, the archaeological digging, is destroying the foundations of Palestinian homes. Can you talk a little bit more detail about, because I think, again, this gives just an, you know, you see tourist buses going to see the archaeological park as this complete destruction of Palestinian life is taking place. Can you talk about that, please?
Yeah, I just want to mention that this archaeological part, it is used to serve the settler project, actually. They do not show the ruins of anything else except for something related to the Jewish state, for example. And people in Silwan, Palestinians in Silwan, are now getting eviction orders from their houses in the purpose of expanding this archaeological research. So,
and they're not finding anything anyway. They're not finding King David.
No, no, no. So this project is not only affecting the Palestinian identity or the Palestinian heritage. It's also affecting people by evacuating them out of Silwan, and in order to take over Silwan, so settlers can come, so they can replace actually Palestinian settlers instead of Palestinians in Silwan.
And the settlers are particularly violent. They have their own militia. There have been deaths. There have been people dying. They were killed by
and
them.
They are protected actually by the military. And just to understand the relationship between the settlers and the government itself, you know, there are many settlers organizers, just like Al Ad, for example, and many others, where I don't want to mention, but they usually lead the invasions of Al-Aqsa Mosque now and back then, okay? And they usually lead the attacks on Palestinians in Silwan or even in the West Bank of Jerusalem, but they are protected by military. So they are not only a settler organization or I don't know, militias or what we can call them, they are also protected and connected to the military, to the army.
I think you mentioned Ir Amim as well, right?
Yes.
And
Ilham.
And these are, I think it's important to mention the names because they come to America and they raise millions and millions of dollars here as a not-for-profit, pretending that they are for education, pretending that they are for some kind of, you know, I don't know what. And as a nonprofit, they raise millions of dollars. They don't have to pay taxes on it. And the money goes to this extreme violent and terrorizing of the Palestinian community in Jerusalem. That's really their mission, is the violent terrorizing of Palestinian in Jerusalem so that the Palestinians would have to leave and they can take
Absolutely.
over. So
And
these are actually
of course,
terrorist organizations to that are kind of pretending to be something else.
Actually, and this actually goes or continues, but you know, in more and more crucial way after October 7th, especially in Jerusalem. And the war on Gaza, it did reflect and still reflects the situation in some kind of situation in Jerusalem.
What do you mean? Explain, please. Please.
Yes, of course. Actually, from the first day of the war on Gaza, Jerusalem, just like other Palestinian neighborhoods, cities, or just like cities around the world, went into general different strikes. This actually, the strikes, was after a full closure imposed on Jerusalem, changing it to a military base, Miko.
What do you mean full closure?
Full closure, it means that people are not allowed to enter Jerusalem from Jerusalem, which is outside the wall, or the West Bank. So people from Jerusalem who are outside the wall are not allowed to enter Jerusalem inside the wall. People from the West Bank who has already a permission to enter Jerusalem are not allowed to enter Jerusalem.
And this
Even
applies
goods.
to Palestinians only.
Yeah, and including goods, services, workers, everything. And to put things into context, actually, it created the Israeli authorities actually created a militarized environment in Jerusalem, which is already isolated, you know, with increased presence of military and police and flying checkpoints. And for those who don't know what the flying checkpoint is, it is like two cars in the middle of the street where Palestinians need to go between these cars in order to reach the other side of the road. But before cutting this flying checkpoint, they need to show their IDs, to show their phones. And there are many organizations now, especially in the north of Palestine, that are now working on limiting the duties, or I don't know what we can call it, but limiting the actions of the policemen, the Israeli policemen, in tracking and inspecting the Palestinians' phones. Because they ask you to show your ID, they ask you to show your phone, to open your phone, and they can just dive in your phone Regardless if you have like a private, we are, at the end of the day, we are Arabs and we have like this kind of privacy, you know, but they don't care. They just go inside the pictures in your phone, and to see that if you send like pictures to others or what groups are you in WhatsApp or Telegram. And this is getting more and more worse in Jerusalem.
So this is just to cross in order to get from one place to your home.
Yeah, in Jerusalem, in the Palestinian side, inside the wall. This is the case. And it's still valid till now. And, you know, since October 7th and this genocide war on Gaza, most military checkpoints in the occupied Palestinian lands, just like Qalandia, for example, have been closed, which directly affected other neighborhoods of Jerusalem.
Let me stop you there. Qalandia is closed since October 7th?
Yeah, and no, it reopened actually, but I want to put things into context, you know?
Yeah, please, yeah.
And it was closed for almost 20 days, where people are not allowed to enter in or out. Only ambulances and, you know, they can cross the checkpoint. But this closure actually affected very, very big neighborhoods with large population, just like Kfar Aqab and Shafat and Shafat refugee camp and Anata town, that are located actually inside the municipal borders, the Jerusalem municipal borders, but outside the wall.
So just to clarify, Qalandia is, you know, when you say checkpoint, I think sometimes people think of like a little gate. Qalandia is a major terminal, really, when, I don't know, thousands, tens, hundreds of thousands of people crossing from one side of Jerusalem to the other. It does not divide Jerusalem from another part of the city, or other cities. It divides two parts of Jerusalem. Because like I said, the people that live on the other side are still paying taxes and are considered living in the municipal borders of Jerusalem, but they are completely secluded from that. And this communicate, this, you know, moving back and forth in that checkpoint is a crucial lifeline. So that was closed for 20 days.
Yeah, for almost 20 days. And Kfar Aqab, for example, where the Qalandia military checkpoint remained closed actually for, as I said, 20, from 2 weeks to 20 days. And when it reopened, Miko, there was like intensified inspections of the Palestinians, causing the checkpoint crossing to take around 3 hours due to the strict procedures. And this is the only checkpoint, the nearest checkpoint to Kfar Aqab, again, which is Jerusalem.
It's the way to Ramallah too. I mean, it's the main road to Ramallah.
And yeah, if you come from the old city to Ramallah, you need to go through this checkpoint.
And a lot of people go. I mean, Ramallah, Jerusalem is a very important
travel
route.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of people do. This is an important travel.
Yeah. And talking about the old city of Jerusalem, I want to tell you something that it is still practiced till now, but you know, unless you know, Palestinians only. Only Palestinians who live inside the old city of Jerusalem, the old city walls, are allowed to enter. Only Palestinians who live inside this wall
are allowed to
enter the old city of Jerusalem. Me, as a Palestinian, born and raised in Jerusalem, but now in the old city of Jerusalem, but now I live in Wadi al-Jawaz, until now, I'm not allowed to enter the old city of Jerusalem. And if they allow me, they will ask me to enter from one gate, for example, Damascus Gate, and exit from this gate to get my ID back.
So wait a minute. So I have to repeat some of these things because I think people need to hear them again and again for it to sink in. And we have about a minute before we have to take a break. But so Palestinians aren't prohibited from entering the old city of Jerusalem unless they are residents of the old city of Jerusalem. And it's a very small, And people go, again, all the time. I mean, it's a very important travel route. There's shops, there's markets, people live there. I mean, the Al-Aqsa is there, the places people go to pray, and on and on and on.
Yeah.
So unless you are a resident of the old city as a Palestinian, now I'm assuming, of course, again, this does not apply to Jewish residents of Jerusalem, only the
Of course,
Palestinians,
yeah, only for
are
Palestinians.
not permitted to enter the old city of Jerusalem. I'm going to stop right there because I want to continue after the break. Once again, this is the Miko Peled Hour. I'm Miko Peled. My guest, Yazan Reshef, is from Jerusalem, telling us some horror stories about reality for Palestinians in the old city, in the Palestinian side of the city of Jerusalem. Don't go away. We'll be right back with this fascinating interview. Welcome back to the Miko Peled Hour. I'm Miko Peled. I'm talking to my friend Yazan Reshef from Jerusalem. He is the director, executive director of Grassroots Al-Quds, which is one of the most important grassroots organizations in Palestine, dealing with the very, very difficult conditions that Palestinians have to endure within Jerusalem. And again, Palestinians have been living in Jerusalem continuously, some families certainly for 800 and more years, yet their conditions are completely different. Even their status as residents are completely different than the ones of Israeli Jews. So this is a really, really important conversation to have. So before we went for the break, you were saying that Palestinians are prohibited from entering the old city of Jerusalem, which again is a major part of the life in Jerusalem because there are markets and shops and businesses and of course Al-Aqsa and important churches that people go and worship in. So what is it like if you do want to enter? What happens if you try? I mean, how can you enter if you need to?
Yeah. From the beginning, after October 7th till mid of November, nobody was allowed to enter the old city of Jerusalem except for Palestinians who live inside. Only Palestinians who live inside Al-Aqsa, inside the old city of Jerusalem. But after mid November, some people were lucky enough to enter the old city of Jerusalem, not Al-Aqsa Mosque, and I'll talk about Al-Aqsa Mosque more now. They need to show their IDs, and sometimes the soldier will stop them and ask to keep their IDs. And if they enter from one gate, for example, Damascus Gate, which is a busy gate, the main entrance of the old city of Jerusalem, which is now empty, if they manage to enter from Damascus Gate, the soldiers, the Israeli soldiers, will ask them to exit the old city from the same gate so they can get their IDs back. This applies till now in the old city, in the Al-Aqsa Mosque. This is, and before moving to Al-Aqsa Mosque, I just want to mention that all this is a policy, okay? All these closures actually cut off the flow of Palestinians to Jerusalem and the old city of Jerusalem in specific, including school students, you know, and patients. The closures policy actually also impact Palestinian workers from the West Bank who have the permission to work in Jerusalem or Palestinians who hold the Jerusalem ID, just like me, in addition to shop owners inside the old city of Jerusalem, being unable to reach their businesses and workplaces in Jerusalem, actually preventing these owners, the shop owners inside the old city of Jerusalem, but they do not live there, okay? Preventing them from accessing the economic stability and services in the holy city. And this, of course, led to a loss of income for the Palestinians and a significant impact on their lives. And again, the occupation policies hasn't stopped at just imposing closures on and restrictions on Palestinians and the city itself. And since the current situation began October 7th, Palestinians have been prohibited from sharing their thoughts and feeling on social media about the ongoing war on Gaza and the violation in the West Bank. They can even get arrested, and many got arrested actually for posting any related content or interacting with a shared post, you know, like a quote, a picture, or a surah from the Quran, for example, on the social media platforms. And this is an attempt actually to limit the Palestinians' freedom of speech. And on the other hand, Look, on the other hand, the Israeli settlers can move around the city freely and directly threatening and encouraging the attacks on Palestinians in the West Bank, as we see on social media and the media platforms, in addition to flooding Jerusalem with a lot of Israeli flags.
So you said something about Damascus Gate, how, you know, anybody who's been to Jerusalem, who's been to Palestine, knows Damascus Gate is always very, very busy. So you're saying it, you said it was empty now. So the old city, so what is happening in the old city? Is it empty? Are people not going? Are shops closed?
Many shops are closed. You know, way before, because of the wall, the construction of the wall, more than 5,000 shops were closed totally inside the old city of Jerusalem just because of the wall.
5,000?
But now, people who own shops inside the old city of Jerusalem, they find it very, very difficult to go inside or to enter the old city of Jerusalem, or sometimes they are not allowed to enter the old city of Jerusalem. That's why they cannot open their shops.
And if people aren't allowed to enter the city, even if they open the shop, they don't have customers. So that doesn't, it's just, you know, it's really horrifying to hear this. I mean, it's absolutely horrifying. They're basically suffocating the old city of Jerusalem. And there are a lot of, so if I went to Damascus Gate today, I could walk in and out freely, no problem.
And
but you
you
can't.
Know, you can. And people also, not Palestinians, for example, can enter Al-Aqsa Mosque whenever they want, while Palestinians are not allowed to enter. This is the 16th Friday where I, a Palestinian, born and raised in Jerusalem, in the old city of Jerusalem, I wasn't allowed to enter and pray inside of Al-Aqsa Mosque because of my age, because of many different reasons, you know, because of the security or the general situation, as they say, on the gates, the guards, the Israeli soldiers. You are not allowed to enter Al-Aqsa Mosque because of this whole situation. When this situation ends, you can enter.
So okay? Who is allowed?
People more above 60, and also people who are above 60, but they look like healthy, are not allowed to enter. And you know,
now this has nothing to do, you know, I think I just want to say, make a point, you know, the whole argument that Israel is somehow fighting, you know, this brutality, this massive, you know, this gross brutality in Gaza, that's taking place in Gaza, is somehow, you know, an attempt to end terrorism or, you know, something like that. Well, what has that got to do with Jerusalem? And what has that got to do with people like yourself? And what has that got to do? Why are they restricting? And it shows that actually the objective has nothing to do with Palestinian resistance or anything like that. It has to do with this campaign of suffocating Palestinians so that they end up leaving. And they're incapable, they're not able to live, they're not able to take care of their families, they're not able to make a living, and they eventually will have to leave. As the settlers, which are all Israelis are settlers really, or the children of settlers, are free to come and go as they please,
absolutely
anywhere at any time. And again, I think, again, Jerusalem is a focal point. Jerusalem is, you know, it's the most famous city, not only in Palestine, but perhaps in the world. Everybody knows about Jerusalem. And very little is known about Jerusalem. So your work and this your words right now, I think, are so important to be heard. And because of this enormous amount of violence in Gaza, all the attention is there. So what is happening in Jerusalem and other parts of the Palestine is never discussed because it's not as bad, you know, because you don't have tens of thousands of people killed. Everything else seems like it's not as important, but I think it's a mistake to view it that way because this is all part of the exact same thing. It's all part of the exact same thing. And it's really, really important to put it all in context. So I appreciate that. But anyway, go on. So you're talking about Palestinians are afraid to have any kind of presence on social media because what, they might get arrested?
Yes, of course. And many Palestinians actually who holds an Israeli citizenship, especially in the north of Palestine, got arrested. Many of them are like public figures they work in the municipality, or they are like famous characters in their community, and they hold the Israeli citizenship. And because of posting or sharing their thoughts on social media, they got arrested. You know, and this is getting more and more worse in Jerusalem, because as you said before, Jerusalem is a focal point here. And for Palestinians, especially organizations who work in this field, okay, are now working in being very, very like conscious to their words, to what they share on social media, to what trying to show the whole picture in a way that they will not get asked or closed, just like the six Palestinian organizations who were closed 3 years ago, just like Al-Haq al-Damir, very big organizations in Jerusalem. And on the other side, as I said, Israelis are allowed to express their feelings like freely, encouraging to attack Palestinians on the West Bank or even in Jerusalem, calling for gathering in the municipality area, for example, in order to invade Al-Musrara and some places outside the old city of Jerusalem. And this is, you know, this is the case. This is the case now in Jerusalem. But I just want to mention one thing about Al-Aqsa, okay, because it is very, very... here it's the point here, okay, because why Israelis are doing this, okay, and of course for the purpose of ensuring like more control on and dominance and trying to impose a new reality on Al-Aqsa Mosque, because settlers are invading Al-Aqsa Mosque during the morning hours. And it's getting more and more after October 7th. But the Israeli authorities here are now shaping...
Is this every day? I'm sorry, is this every day?
Yeah, every day, every day. Okay. Yeah, Al-Awqaf, the Islamic Endowment, is sharing reports about the invasions every day, okay? And this new reality, they impose it now because of the war, okay? But what happens after the war? Will it continue? Will it be like... Palestinians are not allowed to enter Al-Aqsa Mosque from 8 to 12, for example. So this is the new reality they are trying to impose on Al-Aqsa Mosque. As also they use it as a tool to control and manipulate the Palestinians through a set of procedures that includes also restriction and suffocation. But Miko, Palestinians are, actually, they have confronted this policy by praying at the nearest points they can reach. For example, Wadi al-Jawz, okay? And Ras al-Amud, for example. They are outside the old city walls. They are 500 meters far from the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Palestinians were also like, in these areas where they pray at the nearest point, they were also targeted by the occupation soldiers, and actually who tried to disperse them with wastewater, tear gas, rubber coated.
They're even praying outside of Al-Aqsa. They're not even trying to go in.
No. They are outside Al-Aqsa, 500 meters far from Al-Aqsa, and they are attacked by the Israeli soldiers, okay? By, as I said, by rubber-coated bullets sometimes by wastewater. And actually, here, in this context, or in contrast, actually, the Israeli police facilitated the invasions of dozens of settlers under the full protection into Al-Aqsa Mosque. And just for the sake of, I don't know, but people here in Jerusalem say they do just in the sake for of provoking Palestinians in the first place and practicing some religious rituals.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I may have told you this, I went several times on these tours, because when you go into Al-Aqsa from Al-Buraq, from the Western Wall, there's a bridge, and that's where the settlers go. So they're supposedly tours, quote unquote. And I went with them a few times to see what it's about. And Yeah, you have. If you have maybe 20 or 30 or 40 people going on the so-called tour, and they do, and they stop and they pray, it's all about that, and we do all kinds of rituals. If you have 20 or 30 people walking on the tour, you have 50 to 100 fully armed police. They armed like soldiers that are walking with them all throughout the entire thing, and it takes an hour. But the other thing, and I think this is important for people to listeners to understand, is that the purpose of the settlers is provocation, absolutely. But beyond that, it's their desire to destroy Al-Aqsa Mosque and to destroy these historic monuments, religious monuments that have been part of the World Heritage for more than 1500 years, and to build something else instead, to build a temple. And when you walk on the bridge, you probably know this, Yazan, when you walk on the bridge to the point where you stop and wait, and they built a big model of the temple, and they have all these banners there about how we shall return and we shall build a temple and so on. And many of the people who go on these tours are not even religious people. These are regular Israeli settlers, not necessarily even religious, but this has become a national agenda to build a temple to destroy Al-Aqsa. And again, just to emphasize, these are monuments. First of all, the place is magnificent, but the Dome of the Rock with the Golden Dome and the Al-Aqsa Mosque, I mean, these are historic monuments that have significance for Muslims around the world, and religiously, but also in many other ways, historically and the heritage and so forth. And they want to destroy it. In other words, this is what they want.
Absolutely. And please, and also for the people hearing us now, we should mention that there are three schools inside the Al-Aqsa Mosque from October 7th.
Three schools.
Yes, more than 600 students of the three schools of Al-Aqsa schools inside Al-Aqsa Mosque have not been spared actually from the aggression of the occupation. Students are subjected to daily detention and inspections and the search of their school bags, hoping to catch a Palestinian curriculum books actually, which are prohibited,
Not
of course,
bombs, curriculum.
from being taught in the schools in Jerusalem.
Not bombs, books.
Yeah, books.
And bo they want to looking to see what kind of books they have. And they're not looking for bombs or anything like that, or weapons. They're
Absolutely.
looking to see what kind of books they have.
Yeah, and especially books from the Palestinian curriculum, because as said before, Palestinian curriculum are not allowed to be taught in schools in Jerusalem, even if in Al-Aqsa Mosque.
So what are they learning? Who writes the curriculum for them?
Okay,
This
that's
is also
a whole
something that's
new
unique.
story actually, but
Also, this is also unique to Jerusalem. Is what is allowed? What Palestinians are allowed to study in the Palestinian schools in Jerusalem? What students are allowed to learn? That is also governed by Israel. Am I right?
Yes. You know, there are two kinds or different kinds, not only two, different kinds of curriculums in Jerusalem. The Israeli Bigrut, which hides the Palestinian Nakba, which is hides the Palestinian struggle, which hides everything.
Basically, a Zionist narrative. So,
Yeah, the Zionist narrative.
Israeli.
And there is also the Palestinian curriculum, which is monitored by the Israelis. And there are other curriculums, the Palestinian curriculum who has been taught in the West Bank, which is, who contains some general terms that are not allowed to be taught in Jerusalem.
So now, and again, just to clarify, Jerusalem has some regular public schools that are run by the city, but they also have private schools that are either Islamic or Christian schools as well. So,
Yes.
what about their curriculum? Is that also monitored? Is it also mandated by the State of Israel?
Absolutely, absolutely. This is monitored by the Israeli authorities, and they are pushing actually schools now, especially private schools, and they threaten them to cut the funding for each student if they do not accept this proposal that they need to teach students the Bigrut curriculum.
Bigrut is the Israeli system for matriculation, so you have to study the Zionist narrative. Obviously, it's the
Absolutely.
Zionist version of history.
Yeah.
So, Jerusalem is unique in terms of, in many ways, it's unique. It's an amazing city, but it's also the life of Palestinians in that city is unique because of the restrictions, because of the lack of status, the lack of rights. And now, since October 7, of course, things have become far, far worse, less just like they've been to Palestinians everywhere else. But again, Jerusalem has significance above and beyond because it's Jerusalem.
And they are still confiscating land in Jerusalem after October 7. They didn't stop. They are still demolishing Palestinian homes. And to make things, just one last thing,
No, please.
to make things like in, to put things into context, and I just want to say something that Palestinians, when they get their demolishing order from the Israeli occupation authorities, that they need to demolish their houses because they didn't manage to, over 20 years, of paying and going through this procedure, bureaucratic procedure, they failed to obtain the building permit where they live now. So Palestinians build a place and they apply for the building permit. And 99, no, not 99, let's say more than 90% of the applications are being rejected. So here, Palestinians are left with only two options. It's either they demolish the house by their own hands, or the Israelis come with the Israeli bulldozer, especially actually sometimes Caterpillar, and they demolish the Palestinian house. And the Palestinian should pay for the demolition and for the security and for the cleaning of the area. So they leave him bankrupt and homeless. And when you look inside the Israeli statistics about numbers of house demolitions in Jerusalem, they always claim that we do not demolish, we only demolish illegal houses. Okay, this is a whole new story. This is a whole new process that may take up to 20 to 30 years to obtain this permit. But when you look inside the Israeli statistics again, you will find that they publish less numbers of houses demolished in Jerusalem. And why? Because they do not count the houses demolished by Palestinians themselves. They only count the houses demolished by the Israeli bulldozers. So whenever they say that we demolished five houses this year, only five illegal houses, it is wrong because it costs a lot and people cannot afford that. So they prefer to demolish their own houses by their own hands.
So, okay, man. So, a couple of things. So, first of all, the process to get a permit is a 20-year process.
Yeah, sometimes more, and
So, what do you
sometimes
do? Where are they supposed to live?
they build the house. They build the house without the permission, without the permit. Okay, and sometimes it takes them like 20 years to obtain the building permit, and sometimes they fail. I have like a personal story about that, you know, and if you fail, as I said, you only have two options, and
So, if your house is demolished, you have to pay, or if you can't afford that, you have to smash up your house. And I've seen
absolutely.
piles and piles of demolished homes, beautiful homes in Jerusalem. And by the way, this is a process that is reserved only for Palestinians, because I know Israeli Jews who built without a permit. They got a fine. If anybody found out, maybe they got a fine, then they went to court, they challenged it, maybe they paid the fine. You never ever see the street being blocked by armed police and bulldozers coming to destroy an Israeli Jewish home anywhere throughout all of Palestine, whereas there are tens of thousands of homes being demolished and demolition orders in existence. We only have about a minute left,
Yeah.
Yazan. Talk a little bit about what you do, what people can do, how people can find out more about your work.
Okay, so as I said before, you can always check our website, grassrootsalquds.org or .net. It is the same. Follow us on social media platforms, Twitter, Instagram,
So
and
it's
Facebook.
grassroots is easy to spell. Al-Quds, which is Alquds.
Yes,
Okay,
of
so it's
course.
clear, yeah.
Now, what are we doing now as for Grassroots Alquds, dedicated actually to promoting justice for Palestinians and highlighting the Jerusalem historical and current importance? We are now working on analyzing this reflections of this war in Gaza on Jerusalem. A paper will be published very, very soon. And we are now doing like this kind of podcasts or interviews. We are inviting people to donate to internationally recognized organizations in Gaza to help to reduce this humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza. And of course, as I said before, because of the current situation in Jerusalem, Grassroots is now working like in very limited capacity, in very limited resources as well. And we hope that the international community will take a place to end this occupation and to end this war on Gaza. This is the only way.
Thank you very much, Yazan. If you've been listening to the Miko Peled Hour, I'm Miko Peled. Yazan Lushik was my guest from Grassroots Al-Quds. Coming up next is Soul Conversations. Please don't go away. Stay tuned. And I will see you again next week. Thank you. Voilà.